Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Las Vegas Courthouse School in Bellevue, Missouri. Hour is an educational service in public interest on the American George Board. Hour editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain, the Kilo case, when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property, especially by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution that was designed by God and then incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. Now, the courts are the proper depository or repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It's not the Congress or the political process. Now listen to this. Did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto? And that's because it's a fighting clause. Its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat, and it cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. It is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. That's a direct quotation from United States versus Johnson. And it's why I suggest and contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. They're claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary, four-hour program on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call right now? That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, send me an email request for your free general law CD packet. Do it right now before you forget. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were reviewing a treatise written by Dr. Richard Apple. You can get this treatise by Dr. Apple on kitco.com. That's kitco.com. It's easy enough to find. /IND/APPEL. Dr. Apple writing about the Kelo decision. I thought I'd review it. He goes on to say that the day after the decision was handed down, I turned first to the New York Times for additional information. Surprisingly, although the Times front page listed what they called major Supreme Court decisions on the Ten Commandments, file sharing, revealing sources and domestic violence, and devoted substantial first page space to three of them, not a single word discussed Kelo versus Newland in Connecticut. Now, this was surprising because the New York Times doesn't normally devote extended coverage to Supreme Court decisions at all. Yet, in my opinion, they omitted any mention of the most important ruling while highlighting others of lesser merit. Well, I don't know, Dr. Apple. It could be that the New York Times is one of those elitists' papers, and they don't want you to think about, and they don't want the general public to know about eminent domain or about the ramifications of this decision. Dr. Apple goes on to say, later that week, a local newspaper, The Atlanticville, ran the headline, High Court Ruling a Blow to Residents. The Atlanticville described the potential ramifications to a number of local residents who were involved in a similar case. Their three-block neighborhood on Marine Terrace, Ocean Terrace, and Seaview Avenue in Long Branch, New Jersey, was involved in a similar eminent domain lawsuit. If they lose the case, which is now likely due to the Supreme Court's decision, the 36 property owners will be forced to sell and vacate their homes. Their dwellings will then be razed and replaced by upscale townhouses and condominiums. Upon learning of the court's decision, a local resident stated, it is a decision that invites corruption, and it puts more power into the affluent and politically connected. And that was what the dissenting opinion in the Supreme Court said. This just opens up a can of worms. I couldn't agree more. The decision, so long as we're practicing communists here in the United States, is correct. Why don't we stop practicing communism and go back to private property? I know it's a wild new concept for most of you, but I'm just suggesting that let's get off of commerce and back onto property and property rights. That will take eminent domain right out of the city's hands. The city wouldn't have the power to come in here and condemn and replace this housing unless there was a financial incentive under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 to do that. You see, cities never had the power to condemn property to
change private property into something that's more profitable or more lucrative. They didn't have it until they got building permits and zoning and planning. Why give cities that kind of power? Now, of course, many people will say, well, you have to have zoning and planning. If you don't, why, you'd have people building hog farms next to residential apartment houses. Well, you know, there's one big major city in the United States, Houston, Texas, that doesn't have zoning and planning, and they don't have hog farms sitting next to residential units. You know, there was a time in America before we had zoning and planning. We had private property rights and seemed to work all right for us. But somebody came along and said, we want to convert our homes into commercial assets. Now, let me suggest something to you here, because did you know it's against the law to sell land? That's why you have to license real estate dealers. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 25. Let me show you something here about land and land law, which has to do with zoning and planning. And this, after all, is the heart and core of what it is that we're interested in, and that's making profit off of our property. And that's that verse 23, this is Leviticus 25, 23, the land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine and your strangers and sojourners with me. The land shall not be sold forever. Now, of course, God didn't understand real estate. He didn't understand property and property rights, profit and profitability, speculation. And so we have taken it upon ourselves to correct God's mistakes. So we've gone into commerce under House Joint Resolution 192. We did it with the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. We added to it with Hale versus Henkel. I mean, you know, we Americans have decided that God was so far out to lunch and so far off the wall that we were going to fix so many of his blatant errors that we now are faced with the side effects that come with those corrections. Side effects. It's kind of like taking drugs. I mentioned that in the last program. You take drugs, you get side effects. Now, nobody in America is opposed to drugs or drug taking. They're just opposed to illegal drugs. I pointed out to you that the illegal drug dealers, the private drug dealers, kill fewer people than the licensed drug dealers. The pharmacists and the doctors and the hospitals kill 130,000 people a year. They call it iatrogenic disease. They prescribe the wrong drugs or the wrong amounts of the drugs, and it kills 130,000 people a year, but illegal drugs, that's heroin, cocaine, and crack, only kill 6,000 people a year. Looks like to me that the illegal drugs are less problem than the legal drugs. I just use that by way of analogy to show you here that when we talk about land and land laws over here, we first of all violated Leviticus 25:23. We want to make profit. Now, I'm sure that Ms. Kello wants to make a profit off of her property. Well, if she would concentrate on profit instead of the issue of, is this a public use, she'd be money ahead. Now, she still has one last chance, one last gasp. Had I been her attorney, I would have suggested that don't be concerned about the taking. Let's grant the government the takings clause. Now, let's concentrate on just compensation, because in the Kello case, just picture this. Surely Ms. Kello must have a street in front of her house, and her house overlooks the view of the bay. And remember that the company that wants to take over this view of the bay and Ms. Kello's location and the location of her neighbors is looking at location, location, location. I mean, surely there's cheaper property than this property that they're condemning. They could have gone out and bought some farm someplace and built their hotels. But the reason they want these hotels built right where they're at is because of the location, and Ms. Kello is in the way of their location. That location is where the money, that's where the value is. Not her house. Not the residential value of the house, it's the location of that house. I live in a pretty good sized house. If this house was located in San Francisco, California, it'd be worth $5 million. Located here in Ozark County, Missouri, it isn't worth a tenth of it. Well, yeah, it's worth a tenth of it. Maybe a fifth of it in Ozark County. Location, boys and girls, is where it's at in real estate. And these people have come by and taken this lady's house. She should be arguing the value, not whether or not this is a public purpose. All right, so now that we violated Leviticus 25:23, let's see what eminent domain is all about. And I'm going to get to eminent domain, and I get through with Mr. Apple's letter. He goes on to say, there are numerous other similar cases pending across the nation that will be affected by this high court decision. And I think Mr. Apple here misspelled the word. Let me see if I can figure out what he's trying to say here. And there will likely be countless more to follow. And yeah, sure you're right, Mr. Apple. I think that there's going to be lots of cases of eminent domain actions. What do you care, boys and girls, whether the railroad, Pacific Gas and Electric, or the U.S. Navy takes your property if you get paid what it's worth? If you get just compensation, what do you care? Now, you may say, well, I've lived here all my life, and I want to continue living here. Well, you know, this comes up all the time out in the real world, and the government needs to build a freeway. And this freeway is going to go right through the middle of your living room. It's going to take your property. And do you have a right to stand in the way of the health, safety, and welfare of millions of people that are going to use this freeway over the next 50 or 100 years by refusing to sell your property? And, you know, we've been over that and over it, and the consensus of opinion has always been, for at least the last 3,000 years, is that, no, you don't. Now, they've expanded on this a little bit. Well, if we can take the property for a threshing floor, if we can take the property for the King's service, or if we can take the property for a freeway or a fort, dock, arsenal, or shipyard, well, then can we take it for urban renewal? And the answer is, yeah, we can take it for urban renewal to build a General Motors assembly plant, to build hotels and motels and big box stores and Costco's and Walmart's. I mean, that's been the conclusion, and it's not something that came out of New London, Connecticut. Hell, that's been around for at least 50 years that I know of. I think all of it's wrong, but then, you know, I don't make these rules and regulations. I don't make these laws. I didn't come up with House Joint Resolution 192 or the 14th Amendment. That wasn't a Gordon idea. When eminent domain was earlier utilized, the compensation for those who lost their property was often at below market prices. The offer was typically presented by the governing body involved. All right, let me pause right there. Okay, well, isn't that what every real estate transaction is involved in? You know, when I go out and make an offer on a piece of real estate, I don't offer them my top dollar. I come in and say, well, I will give you $40,000 for this property. And the guy says, oh, no, it's worth 60. And then we split the difference, and we usually end up somewhere around 50. But if he's asking 60, and I say, okay, well, here's your 60, and the truth be known, he's liable to sell that for 40 if he was in need. Why should I pay the extra $20,000 if I can get it for $20,000 less? I mean, that's what bargaining is all about. That's what give and take and bargaining and offers and tender offers and counter offers are all about. And I don't think it has anything to do with being rich or poor. I think it has to do with being trained and being able to buy, sell, and trade. I teach a business class on buying, selling, and trading. Business class on how to do business. A business class, how to make money. And that's just fundamental in life, you know, how to buy, sell, and trade and make money. Frequently, the affected individuals could not afford proper legal representation and thus were forced to take whatever was offered. Well, boys and girls, I disagree. I don't care whether I'm dealing with the government or dealing with a private party. You know, I can decide whether I want to sell or not. I can decide on what price I want. Now, if the governing body says, well, we'll take your property by eminent domain, okay. Well, I've got a right to notice, opportunity to defend, and a jury trial. I've got a right to walk in and say, listen, they're not offering me enough money, and here's why I'm entitled to more money, boys and girls. Give it to me. Now, others who had sufficient capital to protect themselves, at least, could fight for their just compensation. This situation will not likely change in the future, and those who do not have adequate funds to protect their rights may suffer similar fates. As is often the case, those who will be the most damaged have the least ability to defend themselves. Excuse me. Let's suppose that I'm Caldwell Real Estate. And I come to you and I say, well, I'd like to sell your house, or I'd like to buy your house. Can't you speak up and say, well, no, I don't want you to sell my house, and no, I don't want to sell it, or yes, I do want to sell it, and here's how much I want? Now, the idea that you have to hire an attorney to come in here and deal with you is ignorance, just pure, unadulterated ignorance. If you can't speak for yourself and you can't buy, sell, and trade, I guess maybe you do need a guardian. Maybe you do need a lawyer. But why don't you learn how to do it yourself? You'll come out a lot better. And why do you need to pay a lawyer to go negotiate a transaction, a business transaction? You know, I think Americans have become incompetent over time, dumbed down, as Rush Limbaugh calls it, the dumbing down of America. Charlotte Isherby wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Well, it's not my fault that Americans are dumbed down. You know, there's life out there, and you have to be able to stand up and make intelligent decisions from time to time. Eminent domain decisions are some of those decisions that you have to make. Now, I've been through eminent domain twice, so I kind of know how it works. A paper company came through, and they're going to put a pipeline through, and they paid us $13,000 for damages, cash. They made a hell of a mess, cleaned up all their mess, replaced all the fences, paid us for the loss of pasture. When it was all said and done, we made more money than we would have if we'd have been milking cows on that same amount of ground. We didn't get rich off of it, but we were adequately compensated, and the deal went through. Now, that's 99% of eminent domain cases. Now, it is true, there are some eminent domain cases that come down, and I suspect this Kello case is one of them, where she's not going to be paid an adequate amount of compensation. And I think that she should be paid an adequate amount of compensation, which is at least five times the amount that the retail value of a residence is worth, because they're going to convert that into commercial property. Well, anyway, the frequently affected individuals could not afford proper legal representation. I contend they don't need it. And thus were forced to take whatever was offered. Nobody was ever forced to take what was offered. What are they going to do to you? Kill you? I mean, no, I'm not going to take what you offer. Okay, well, then we've got to have a trial. The jury has to decide, well, are you being offered an adequate amount? Get up on the witness stand and say, no, I'm not. Here's what I want. Here's why I should get more. Tragically, this decision opens the door for many people to be legally forced from their homes. They now stand to suffer financially whenever government officials determine that the public good will be better served if their property is transferred into the hands of others. That's BS, Dr. Apple. BS. Excuse me. Listen to the statement again. Tragically, this decision opens the door for many people to be legally forced from their homes, and they now stand to suffer financially whenever government officials determine that the public good will be better served if their property is transferred into the hands of others. It's been going on forever. It's been going on forever. This eminent domain is not a problem. It's being adequately compensated, which is the problem. In the two cases that I went through, I was adequately compensated. I'm getting complaints. I'm faced with it here on my farm, and I intend to be adequately compensated. I'm not going to prevent Highway 160 from going through my farm, but I intend to be adequately compensated if and when the time comes that they put the highway through my farm. That's all. Now, Sandra Day O'Connor wrote that the court's dissenting opinion. In part, she stated that any property may now be taken for the benefit of another private party, but the fallout from the decision will not be random. The beneficiaries are likely to be those citizens with disproportionate influence and power in the political process, including large corporations and development firms. Well, I agree. Yeah, I agree. That shouldn't be, and it's going to be. But again, let's suppose that the development firm comes by. What difference does it make if it's a large corporation or a development firm, or if it's the United States Army or Navy that wants this property? During World War II, for instance, the Army, the Navy, and various other military organizations needed land to build training bases and so on, and they went out and condemned the property for that, for docks, forts, arsenals, and shipyards. Again, I'm asking the question, what difference does it make to you whether it's the United States Navy that takes it and builds a naval base, or whether it's Walmart that takes it and builds a box store? Aren't you just as dispossessed with either entity? Either entity, you're just as dispossessed. Why is it that if the Navy takes it, it's okay for me to be dispossessed, but if Walmart takes it, that's bad to be dispossessed? Come on, boys and girls, let's grow up. Let's wake up now and smell the coffee. The truth of the matter is, it's irrelevant and immaterial. The real question is, am I going to be properly compensated? And Walmart is going to want to pay as little as possible, just like the U.S. Navy is going to want to pay just as little as possible. Your job is to make sure they pay you every damn dime that you got coming. Every damn dime. I'm going to talk about that as we progress. Finally, Dr. Apple says this. He says, it is impossible to foretell how this unprecedented interpretation of the Fifth Amendment will affect all of us. However, it is likely that as time passes, eminent domain will become more widely utilized to displace honest, law-abiding Americans from their homes and property. I want to ask you a question here, Dr. Apple. Let's suppose that eminent domain comes along and it dispossesses not an honest law-abiding American, but a dishonest law-breaking American. Would you say then that if this guy is dishonest and law-breaking, we can take his house? But if he's honest and law-abiding, we can't take his? Why can we take the property of somebody who is dishonest and law-breaking, but we can't take the property of someone that's honest and law-abiding? Now, we call those admiralty prizes, and we got off on that insanity here about 25, 30 years ago, back in the 70s, and we came to the conclusion that if somebody's dealing in illegal drugs, which is dishonest and law-breaking, we can take his houses and his cars and everything that he's got. Why don't we punish lawbreakers? Or we could put it this way. If you can take the property of somebody that's dealing drugs, why can't we take the property of somebody that speeds or drives on the wrong side of the road? I mean, after all, let's suppose that you're a drunk driver, and you're out here driving drunk, and you're breaking the law. You're dishonest, and you're a lawbreaker. So we're going to convict you, and then we're going to take your house away from you, and take your cars away from you, your bank accounts away from you, or any other property that you've got. I don't understand the logic behind that, and neither did our founding fathers who prohibited these ex post facto laws and bills of attainder. And that's precisely what an admiralty prize is. It's an ex post facto law and a bill of attainder. That's the legal effect of it. I'm sitting here saying, why should we participate in that? Why do we want to do that? Because we say to ourselves, well, I'm not a drug dealer, so I don't care if they come and take drug dealers' property. And one day I was reading a story, and this lady had a property that she had rented, and these people that she rented it to were drug dealers, and the government came in, arrested the drug dealers, and then seized her property. And she's sitting there wondering, well, duh. See what happens with admiralty prizes? Government can come along and claim that you're a drug dealer, and then you have to come and defend. I don't think you should have those kind of laws to start with. I don't think that honest, law-abiding Americans should be separated from their property. And I don't think that dishonest, law-breaking Americans should be separated from their property either. That property is property, and property belongs to people, and that property ought not to be taken from them without compensation, period. And if the guy is out breaking the law, then he should pay the penalty that the law prescribes, but it's not the loss of his property. But we came along and said, no, we think the guy should forfeit his property. Well, that's more than God Moses had in mind. God Almighty never required that you forfeit your property because you broke the law. And if government can take your property because you broke the drug laws, they can take your property because you broke the traffic laws, or because you broke the marriage laws, or because you broke some economic law, or you broke any law, they can take your property. Now, why do you want to put yourself at that kind of risk at the hands of nameless, faceless bureaucrats? Nameless, faceless, unelected bureaucrats that head your zoning and planning and your building departments have that kind of power over you. Why do you want to give them that kind of power? Why do you want to practice the first plank to the Communist Manifesto? That's my question, Ms. Kellow. All right, Dr. Apple, now I have reviewed your paper, and that's a good paper, and I agree with you politically, but legally I think you're out to lunch. Nothing personal, just making a review. And I'm going to put those two papers over there along with Hale versus Hinkle. And I said a little earlier that we would take a look at the origin of this whole concept of eminent domain. And we do that by looking at Ahab and Jezebel and David and the story of the threshing floor. And you'll see that the first one is in 2 Samuel 24, verse 18. So if you can find a 2 Samuel 24, verse 18, and you'll see that David, the king of Israel, needed a piece of property. And in verse 18, he comes to a guy. And then Gad came that day to David and said to him, "Well, go up and rear an altar to the Eternal in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite." And David, according to the saying of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming on toward him. And Araunah went out and bowed himself before the king with his face upon the ground. And Araunah said, "Wherefore is my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor of thee, to build an altar unto the Eternal, that the plague may be stayed from the people." And Araunah said unto David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up what seems good to him. Behold, here be oxen for burnt sacrifice, and threshing instruments, and other instruments of the oxen for wood. All these things did Araunah as a king give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, 'The Lord thy God accept thee.' And the king said unto Araunah, 'No, but I will surely buy it of you at a price. And neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing.' So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built there an altar unto the Eternal and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Eternal was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel." This had to do with that census that David took. And there was a penalty to be paid. This was a public need, a public purpose. And David needed this threshing floor, and he came to this guy, and he said, "Hey, I need this threshing floor." And he said, "I'm going to pay you for it." And he paid him 50 shekels of silver. Evidently, 50 shekels of silver was the appropriate price. The guy didn't, at least the text doesn't tell us that he was complaining about just compensation. Now, this is an example of compensation for an eminent domain taking. The king says, "I'm going to take this ground." And it was God that had directed that this particular threshing floor, that this particular piece of real estate be taken. How big it was, what its value was, I don't know. Now, 50 shekels in today's dollars isn't very much money. At $7 an ounce times 50, times 7 is only $350. The correct price of gold is 16 to 1, not $7. Gold is selling for $450, so divide that by 16, and the correct price is 2813 times 50, which is $1,406 in depreciated, adjusted for inflation, Federal Reserve note, fiat currency dollars. $1,400. That's what he paid for it. This is an eminent domain action. It's a taking by the government. The king came and said, "I'm taking the property. I need it." The guy said, "I'll sell it to you," and then they arrived at 50 shekels. David said, "I'm not going to take it for nothing." The guy offered it to him for nothing. He said, "Okay, well, you're the king. I guess you can take it." David said, "No, we're not going to take it for nothing. We're going to pay you. Here's the amount we're going to pay." And evidently, $1,400 seemed to be a fair price for the property. For that day and age, I guess maybe that was a fair price. If it wasn't a fair price, then he should have held out for 100 shekels or something else. David said, "I'm going to pay you for it." I guess the guy could have said, "Oh, give me 100 then. Give me fair market value. Give me something that's reasonable." Now, we'll take a look here after the break, and we'll take a look at Ahab and Jezebel. You can flip over to that one. It's in 1 Kings 21, verses 1 through 19. 1 Kings 21. I'll flip over there quickly. 1 Kings 21, 1 through 19. We'll be right back, boys and girls. Don't go away. There's more to come. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and Law School, please go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief in The Law Hour. And editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour, an editorial review, or vice versa. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Talking about the Kello case, I mentioned that I had received probably 10 or 15, and count them all, but there was a bunch of negative responses here to this Kello decision. And I took a look at it and I said, well, I don't know quite why. Eminent domain's been with us for a long time. I just read to you in 2 Samuel 24, verses 18 through 24, David, in an example of eminent domain action, took a piece of ground, paid a guy for it, and took it for public purpose. The public purpose was to rear up an altar and make a sacrifice to God to stay a plague that David had caused by taking a census, and which the people were participants in by giving David that census information. The people, in reality, were the proximate cause of their own injury. David was the primary instigator of the injury, and so they needed a sacrifice. Today we call it a fine. In those days they called it sacrifice. Another case of eminent domain comes up in the Bible. An eminent domain which was improperly taken. Listen to this story. Story of Ahab and Jezebel and an eminent domain case. This is 1 Kings chapter 21, verse 1. It says, it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, you give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it's near to my house. And I'll give thee for it a better vineyard than this, or if it seem good to thee, I will give you the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto you. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased, because the word of Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I'll not give you the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed, and turned away his face, and would eat no bread. Okay, now get the background here. If you remember in the last program, I showed you that it's against the law to sell a piece of real property. It's prohibited in Leviticus 25, verse 23. The land shall not be sold forever. It's an inheritance, and it has to be passed to the firstborn son, the next generation. And this guy Naboth had a vineyard, and it was next door to, and the king wanted it. Not for a public purpose. He wanted it for his own private purpose. He wanted the vineyard. He said, I want to make an herb garden, and I want it because it's convenient, because it's right next door to my property. I'm the king, I'm rich, and you're Naboth, and you're poor, and I want your property. So he came to Naboth, and he said, I will pay you more than it's worth. And Naboth said, no, it's against the law for me to sell it. Now, I'm asked that question every once in a while. Somebody will come by here and they'll say, well, Mr. Gordon, what is this farm worth? And I tell them it's worth nothing because I can't sell it. So if you came to me and said, I want you to sell me your farm, I'd say, no, it's against the law for me to sell it. This is the inheritance of my fathers. I have to pass it on to my firstborn son. I practice the inheritance law. I practice the law of Moses. I practice the law of God. I know it's crazy and it's off the wall, but that's what the law requires. Now, I can either practice that law, or I can go practice the same law that Miss Keller was practicing, and that Dr. Apple is practicing, and that who's this lady, Nicole Sherrick is practicing, the law of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a choice that I have to make. And I made my choice. I said, I think I'll practice private property rights, and that's what Naboth wanted to practice. So I think I'll just practice private property rights, and no thank you, I will not sell this property to the king. So Ahab was distraught, and he wouldn't eat, and his wife Jezebel came to him and said, well, why is your spirit so sad that you don't eat? And he said to her, because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite, and I said to him, give me your vineyard for money, or else, if it please you, I will give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you my vineyard. And Jezebel his wife said to him, well, dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise, and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, and she sealed them with his seal, and she sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in his city, dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in those letters, saying, proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. And set two men, sons of Belial, before him to hear witness against him, saying, thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him, that he may die. And the men of his city, even the elders and the nobles, who were the inhabitants in his city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them, and as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them. And they proclaimed a fast, and they set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and they sat before him, and the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. And then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him with stones, that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth was stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money, for Naboth is not alive but dead. And it came to pass, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab arose, and he went down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it. Now the word of the Eternal came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, You arise and go down and meet with Ahab the king of Israel, which is in Samaria. And behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, whether he has gone down to possess it. And you shall speak unto him, and tell him this for me. Thus saith the Eternal, Have you killed and also taken possession? And that thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Eternal, In the place where dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. And Ahab said to Elijah, Hast thou found me, O my enemy? And he answered, I have found thee. And because thou hast sold thyself to work evil in the sight of the Eternal, behold, I will bring evil upon you, and I will take away your prosperity, and your posterity, and I will cut off from Ahab him that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up and left in Israel. And I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha the son of Elijah, for the provocation wherewith you have provoked me to anger and made Israel to sin. And of Jezebel also spake the Eternal, saying, The dog shall eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. Him that dieth of Ahab in the city, the dogs shall eat, and him that dieth in the field shall the fowls of the air eat. Now, you probably heard that story in Sunday school and missed the point that this is an eminent domain case. Eminent domain case. The king said, I'm going to take this property and I'm not going to pay for it. I'm going to take it and I'm not going to pay for it. So I just wanted to suggest to you that, no, that's not the way that game is going to be played out. Now, it's played out that way all across America because the people themselves do not obey God and keep His commandments. They have turned their property into commerce. They have bought and sold and traded. They have made their inheritance into a vehicle for making profit and gain. Now, remember, Dr. Apple said that there's 36 homes, 36 homeowners. These 36 homeowners all participate in and practice commerce. Remember that story? He said over here in New Jersey. Let's see if I can find the story over here. And yeah, it's right here. He said later that week, a local newspaper, the Atlanticville, ran the headline, High Court Ruling a Blow to Residents. The Atlanticville described the potential, the ramifications to a number of local residents who were involved in a similar case. Their three-block neighborhood on Marine Terrace, Ocean Terrace, and Seaview Avenue in Long Branch, New Jersey, was involved in a similar eminent domain lawsuit. If they lose the case, which is now likely due to the Supreme Court's decision, the 36 property owners will be forced to sell and vacate their homes. Their dwellings will then be razed and replaced by upscale townhouses and condominiums. Upon learning of the court's decision, a local resident stated, It is a decision that invites corruption. It puts more power into the affluent and politically connected. Well, you can't deny that Ahab, the king, and Jezebel were politically connected. And Ahab was covetous, and he desired Naboth's vineyard. Now, the state of New Jersey wants to take the 36 residences of these people in North Branch or Long Branch, New Jersey. And these people are all involved in commerce. They've got mortgages on their homes. They have an equitable interest in their possession. This is not an inheritance from their fathers. This is a commercial venture. These people are buying, selling, and trading. They're buying and selling land. Ah, wait a minute. These people aren't practicing the law of God. They're not practicing private property. They're practicing commerce. They're practicing the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. And so the king, the state of New Jersey, is going to come in here and condemn the property and use it for some other purpose. Now, fortunately, your federal constitution guarantees you just compensation, boys and girls, even though you are lawless people, even though you have broken the law. And wasn't it Mr. Apple that said, wait a minute, these are honest, law-abiding Americans. Wait a minute, these 36 people are engaged in paying usury and interest in violation of the law of God. They're engaged in mortgages and unjust weights and balances in violation of the law of God. And yet God Almighty Himself demands that these people be paid for their property rights, even though they are dishonest and they are criminals in violation of the law of God. You know, God never came along and said, well, because you're breaking my law, I'm going to take your property away from you. That was an idea that we came up with. We Americans came up with that idea. We call those admiralty prizes. And as you can see here, these two examples I gave you of David and Ahab and Jezebel. Are the beginnings. This is Anglo-Saxon administration. This is why we have a Fifth Amendment that says, nor shall private property be taken by government for public purposes without just compensation. Our founding fathers followed Ahab and Jezebel and King David in eminent domain. It's Anglo-Saxon administration. That's why we do it. Now, we came along and said, well, we're gonna modify this a little bit. We're going to apply the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, particularly the first plank, then the fifth plank and the second plank, and as long as we're at it, we'll put the eighth plank with it, and with these four planks to the Communist Manifesto, we'll go out and make profit and gain and convert our inheritance, our land, into commerce so that we can buy, sell, and trade it in violation of Leviticus 25:23, so that we can make profit and gain in unjust weights and balances off of land that were prohibited from buying, selling, and trading. Now, you notice Naboth said, I ain't selling this land because it's against the law for me to sell it. He was obeying the law of God. He was an honest, law-abiding Israelite, and the king killed him. And because of that, God came along and said, okay, Ahab, here's what's going to happen to you and your wife Jezebel because you did that. Now, let me show you one more scripture here in Exodus 23:20. Let me show you something. If you were practicing the law of God, you're going to find out over here that God said, I'm going to send an angel in verse 20. Before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place that I've prepared. Now beware of this angel and obey his voice and provoke him not. Don't give this angel the finger, boys and girls, because this angel will not pardon your transgressions because my name is in him. When the name of the sovereign is in his servant, that's called an ambassador. Verse 22, but if you shall indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. Now, Dr. Apple was concerned. He said, oh, you know, poor people over here are going to be put upon and they're going to be taken advantage of. And I'm here to tell you, you poor people out there, if you obey God and keep his commandments, nobody's going to be put upon you. God himself said, I'll be an enemy to your enemy. I'll be an adversary to your adversary. Anybody messing with you is messing with me. Of course, we Americans don't believe that, and we don't practice that, but I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, that's what eminent domain is all about. There's where it comes from. There's where the story begins. Let me give you a couple of more stories here that go along with this. Here's Marbury versus Madison, 5 U.S., 137, decided in 1803, wherein the Supreme Court of the United States stated that all laws which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Now, if a law is repugnant to the Constitution, and this is what Mrs. Kellogg was arguing, she said, now, wait a minute, the taking of my house is repugnant to the Constitution. It's unconstitutional. You can't take this property for that kind of use. And I read to you those 12 words in the Fifth Amendment, didn't I? Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Let me read that again. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. It doesn't say that private property cannot be taken. It says that private property cannot be taken without just compensation. And that the use that this private property is going to be put to has to be for a public purpose. And the city of New London says, well, our public purpose is, and we're going to build hotels, we're going to make more taxes, and we're going to lower taxes to other people, or we won't have to raise their taxes as often, and it's going to make more jobs available. And of course, I told you about John Evans, the governor of Idaho, went out and solicited Hewlett-Packard to build a factory in Ada County, Idaho, for the express purpose of bringing jobs and investment, employment, to Idaho. And they did. And it's commerce, and it's purely commercial, and they gave them tax incentives. And that's because the state of Idaho is a business. It ought not to be. The state of Idaho should be a sovereign governmental power. It has been converted into a business. I don't know why we wanted that, but for some reason we decided we wanted it. And cities are municipal corporations. I showed you that with South Tucson, Arizona. They've got assets. They can sue and be sued. They are persons under the 14th Amendment. So when you buy a house in the city, you become a stockholder in that city. That's the legal ramifications of your residence in the city. And the city comes along and says, okay, all of us, the residents of New London, Connecticut, are in this business of the business of New London, Connecticut for profit and gain. And for most of you people, it makes profit and gain. And Ms. Kellogg is entitled to make some of that profit. Now, whether she's going to get her just share of the profits or she's going to get a share of the profits, I don't know. Let's see if we can't show Ms. Kellogg how to get her just share of the profits. Well, in Marbury versus Madison, the court clarified their position in Miranda versus Arizona. Miranda versus Arizona, cited at 384 U.S. 436, wherein they stated, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. And in Norton versus Shelby County, cited at 118 U.S. 425 on page 442, the justices stated that an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no rights. It imposes no duties. It affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. Now, a note may be made of the legal reference, 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd Section 177, 2nd Edition, Section 256, stating, quote, no one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but it is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. And finally, when they say the state has the authority and power to regulate you You might mention Schick versus United States, 1904, 195 U.S. 65, which clearly says otherwise. If there's any conflict between the provisions of the Constitution enumerated powers to make law and the provisions of the amendments, the Bill of Rights, the amendments must control. The amendments must control any conflict. You know, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Miss Kellogg went into court arguing that the actions of the city were unconstitutional. A simple reading of the provisions would have said to anybody, in my view, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. She said, the taking of that property is not for a public use. I can show you for over the last 50 years many court cases where they've gone in like Chavez Ravine and simply taken the property away from people and promised them that they would build them high-rise apartments at some indefinite time in the future and that that was a public purpose. Well, I can assure you that the city of Los Angeles wasn't going to build those high-rise apartments. They were going to turn that over to some corporation like Guy F. Adkinson or somebody to build, Walter Opp or George Gordon or somebody. No, boys and girls, it's not what are they going to use the property for, it's how much are you going to pay me? Just bring your checkbook, boys. Bring the checkbook, because they're going to take it. They're going to take it because we're now practitioners of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's what our problem is. We're now practitioners of the Communist Manifesto. We gave up private property. We gave up the 10 Commandments. We threw God and the 10 Commandments and the Bible out of our public schools and out of our public institutions and replaced it with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We've replaced that with commerce, the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8, profit and gain. Now we've got some side effects. And four justices recognize those side effects. God bless them. Yeah, that's right. There's the side effects. You four justices should have voted with the majority. It's pretty plain. New London's got a public purpose. Oh, but there's these side effects. Yeah, that's right. The side effects of free sex are you lost your virginity, and virginity is once. All virgins can become whores, but not all whores can become virgins. That's the bottom line. All right, we'll be back with more next time when we see you tomorrow night. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I'm going to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.